chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make heaven in the middle of it. Rest make heaven in the middle. We are rest make heaven.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Buck. We're going to have a fine program for you this evening. We're going to start off with about an 11-minute clip from Mike Adams, and he is repeating the same theme over and over again, but I think it's very valid. It's about the cognitive effects of the vaccines and the virus. But here we go with Mike Adams.
The spike protein bioweapon is working to bring down human civilization in an unexpected way, and it's through cognitive decline. Now, we all already know that the spike protein causes myocarditis, heart attacks, and strokes, kills people. It causes infertility and effectively a slow depopulation through that method, or, I don't know, rapid, however you wish to characterize it. But cognitive decline is something that is rapidly accelerating. I don't know if you've noticed this, but I'm seeing it everywhere. I'm seeing that people who took the vaccine, and especially those who continue to take the booster shots, are no longer able to cognitively function. They can't hold ideas in their minds. They can't complete tasks. They can't organize. They can't think. They can't plan. They are being made, you know, medically speaking, cognitively retarded because the spike protein damages neurology. And I don't mean that every single person who took the vaccine has become an idiot. What I mean is it's clear that those who took the mRNA injections, their bodies have been turned into spike protein factories. And so they're creating spike proteins which are having a long-term effect circulating in their bodies on an ongoing basis, by the way. It's not clear when that ever ends. Because, you know, the mRNA takeover of the cells to produce these spike proteins and to introduce them into the blood, this is the design of the mRNA injections. And so spike proteins are being produced and they're circulating in these people's bodies and they are being pumped into their brains through the blood supply. And it's affecting their neurology. So much so that I'm beginning to wonder if human civilization is sustainable at this point. Because we're seeing the breakdown of a level. Well, look. You have to have people who can think in order to have a sustainable civilization, right? You've got to have policies that make sense. You have to have economics functioning. You have to have people who understand risk, who understand numbers and accounting. You have to have people who understand logistics and transportation and supply chains and farming and food production, and all these things have to work. And all these things are breaking down. And if you trace the breakdowns, it's easy to blame it on COVID. Oh, the lockdowns and the supply chain problems, but actually, that's over. So what accounts for the breakdowns now? I believe a large portion of the breakdowns right now are due to cognitive retardation caused by spike protein exposure and the deterioration of brains. And it's almost as if you did an autopsy on some of these people and you opened up their skulls, not that I'm saying you should, but if you did, it might look a lot like prion disease, just folded proteins, kind of like a non-functional mass. And, you know, instead of the normal healthy pink brain matter, you would have just gray, dead, gelatinous, you know, spike protein matter. It's like the brain has been slowly taken over with the spike protein. And what's horrifying and also fascinating about this is that, you know, the brain can compensate for a lot of damage. there is something called neuroplasticity. And the brain rewires itself because it is such an extraordinary piece of biology. You know, the brain can relearn things, as we're seeing with stroke victims like Jamie Foxx. He's relearning how to walk after the vaccine, after he took the vaccine and then suffered a really debilitating stroke that apparently left half his body at least temporarily paralyzed, according to reports. So your brain can relearn a lot of things, which means that there's a certain amount of damage that can take place in the brain that can go unnoticeable, even by the person who's brain damaged and also by the people around them. So although it's hard to put exact numbers on this, just as a thought experiment, let's say the spike protein damages somebody's brain by 10%. Would you even notice? I mean, a lot of people aren't that smart anyway. If they talk in a way that's 10% more stupid, I mean, who's going to know the difference? But what if they're damaged 25%, 30%, 40%, 50%? Well, the brain can compensate. So they might have 50% spike protein damage in the brain, but the brain rewires and relearns to kind of compensate for half of that. So maybe they're only functioning at a 25% loss. And you're talking to these people, like what happened, I relayed this story, it's a true story. One of my family members was at a doctor's office and trying to pay the receptionist the money that was due, and the amount due was $398, and my family member paid them $400, and the receptionist was trying to desperately calculate with a calculator what's $400 minus $398, and couldn't figure it out, and didn't trust my family member when they said, "It's $2, you freaking moron." But the point is that person already 50% spike protein damage? Because you know, to work in medicine today, almost everybody has to be vaccinated. So almost everybody is a spike protein factory or carrier, or has been exposed through shedding to spike proteins. So how can you have a human being working in a medical office who doesn't know 400 minus 398 equals 2? Answer: brain damage. Literal brain damage. Spike protein infiltration of the brain. I don't know if eating is the right word. It's probably not the right word, but you could say degrading the neurological function of the brain to the point where people are just babbling idiots. And I know you've seen some of these like man on the street videos that are sometimes hilarious, where this guy goes out onto the like a city street on a Saturday night and puts a microphone in front of some dumb girl and asks her questions like, "What continent are we on?" And she's like, "Continent? What is a continent?" Or there was a question he was asking some girl like, "What ocean is to the east of the continental United States?" Right? And, "I don't know." Or asked one girl, "What is the duration of the term of the presidency of the United States?" And the girl said, "An hour." And it's not just girls, there are dumb guys too, but for some reason these videos tend to focus on the dumbest girls that human civilization has apparently ever produced. And you wonder, I know it's easy to blame the education system and say, well, of course they're stupid, they're not being taught anything except LGBT victimhood and woke values and virtue signaling, but I don't think that's the whole explanation. I think their brains are being destroyed by the spike protein. And this is a subtle way that that bioweapon brings down society. Now, think about this. Think about the people you interact with. And I know I've mentioned this before, but in a doctor's office, in a bank, oh my gosh, there's an incredible collection of morons that work at banks now that have no idea how numbers function, integers, much less, you know, fractions or compounding interest or other complex subjects. Ah, they go crazy. They don't even know. These people are cognitively retarded, and they're everywhere. I mean, it's so bad that even as an employer in the state of Texas, we require employees to take a basic intelligence test just to see if their brains are functioning. And it's a sit-down test on a computer, and it's simple questions like, well, kind of like from the movie Idiocracy. Remember one of those questions? If one bucket contains 4 gallons of water and a second bucket contains 2 gallons of water, how many buckets do you have? Like, that's the question from the movie, I think. And the guy's like, two? And he's surrounded by all these idiots who are failing the test. Well, what we've come to realize is on a test where every person, like every one of you listening to this, you would score 99 or 100 on this test. We're finding applicants that score 37, 24, and one person scored like 18. And the questions are so simple. I mean, I can't even describe the level of cognitive impairment that would be necessary to miss 4 out of 5 of these questions. And yet, it is common. And this isn't just a Texas thing for those of you who think Texas is just some outback, rural, you know, hick town. No, it isn't. Texas has high tech. Texas has rocketry and like actual rocket scientists and laboratory science, and Texas has some pretty darn good schools, including you know, like MBA schools, business schools, and so on. Texas is actually one of the smartest states in the union at this point, especially with California getting all dumbed down with wokeism. Texas is filled with a lot of smart people, and yet what we're seeing is a dumbing down that is absolutely horrifying. And it's new. It wasn't this way 4 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. It wasn't this way. It's not just that I'm noticing these things, in case you're wondering. It's that everywhere you go, people are dumb as rocks. And, you know, there's no nice words that you could say dumb or stupid or retarded, whatever. People complain about all those words instead of listening to the main point. People will complain, you use the word retarded. You can't use that. You miss the point that people are retarded. Whatever word you want to use is fine with me.
The unruly passengers list I put up before would further strengthen what Mike Adams has been saying about this cognitive problem. So, yeah, you need to look into that. Go into FAA and look up unruly passengers. Anyway, coming up is Sean Duffy, and he seemed to think that there might be someone, a former business associate of Joe Biden, that could flip him on him and start giving some inside information. So here we go with Sean Duffy with that interview.
Charlie Hurt, Washington Times opinion editor and Fox News contributor, as well as Mike Davis, founder and president of the Article 3 Project. Gentlemen, good to see you both. Charlie, I'm going to come to you first. I'm looking at the FBI, Charlie, and I've lost all hope, right? I don't think they're going to investigate Joe and Hunter Biden. So as Americans, if we want the truth, do we have to look to James Comer in the House, by the way, who are not well-equipped to investigate crimes like this? But is that the only hope we have of getting to the truth in regard to the criminal enterprise of Joe and Hunter Biden?
Well, I think that that's probably our best hope at the moment, as well as a few enterprising reporters who are doing their duty and actually trying to get to the bottom of this, because not only has the FBI completely walked off the field and left all of these incredible questions and obvious you know, examples of crimes that have apparently occurred uninvestigated, but the entire media has completely walked away and has lost all interest in doing their job. They're far more interested in, you know, the coverage of a former president who's no longer in office, that they won't begin to investigate the obvious questions, the obvious, I mean, you can't, it's impossible to, you have to knowingly decide you don't want to know the answers to these questions to not try to get to the bottom of some of them. There's such glaring examples of corruption.
And you make a national name for yourself. If you actually break a story like this that everyone else rejected, yeah. I mean, you're almost a national hero, if you will. But, Mike, Newsweek is now reporting that Devin Archer, Hunter Biden's former business partner and former Burisma board member, he is in talks with Republicans on the Oversight Committee to come in and testify. Mike, this could completely blow the case open if he decides to flip on Hunter Biden.
They better put Devin Archer in the witness protection program, because I'm telling you what, the FBI has had evidence since at least 2017 that then Vice President Joe Biden and his sleazebag son Hunter took a $10 million foreign bribe from Burisma and changed American policy, threatened the Ukrainian president that if he didn't fire that Ukrainian prosecutor investigating Burisma and the Bidens, Ukraine was going to lose $1 billion. And USA, that is the allegation. There are 17 audio recordings, apparently, at the FBI, 15 with Hunter and 2 with then Vice President Joe Biden. So this evidence is coming out. What does the Biden Justice Department do? They indict Trump for the non-crime of having his presidential records. They indict Trump for getting into a fight with librarians and other bureaucrats for overdue library books that apparently they claim Trump didn't check out properly.
That's a really good point. We're fighting over librarian and checked out books. But Charlie, your view on this, because again, if Devin Archer flips, or if we have these 17 tapes that allegedly Burisma has, the FBI can stonewall all they want and cover up for Joe Biden, but this information is going to come to the House and get to the public, and Joe Biden may not be able to hide it any longer.
Yeah. And by the way, I think it actually is probably a healthy thing for this to be exposed in the House, simply because it means that it informs the public, since the media refuses to even try to do its job. It informs the public and allows the public to make a decision in the next election, which is how I want to see all this end. I want to see all this end by Joe Biden getting thrown out of office for being the most corrupt president to ever hold office. But Mike also makes a really important point that a lot of people have sort of glossed over. The carrot in this whole bribery scheme, in which the Biden family apparently got paid $10 million, was $1 billion in U.S. American aid going to Ukraine. That was the carrot that the Biden administration was using in order to protect their corrupt cronies at Burisma in Ukraine. And so the question is, you know, what was that $1 billion for? Was that $1 billion simply money that Joe Biden came up with in order to execute this bribery? This is a massive scandal involving U.S. tax dollars in order to enrich the Biden family and sell out American foreign policy.
No doubt about that. And again, in this Hunter Biden, Joe Biden saga, there continues to be cracks because Hunter Biden was deposed today in the Arkansas child support case over his four-year-old daughter. As Jonathan Turley pointed out, it's not clear if Hunter has previously gone under oath about his finances. So, Mike, this actually could be a problem for him. And this court, this mother of his child that was born out of wedlock, may be the avenue in which we get the details of the finances of the Biden corruption scheme.
This is why Hunter Biden is so stupid. He wants to fight over child support and expose his entire foreign corruption scheme. The D.C.-based FBI or the Delaware-based FBI and Justice Department may ignore his crimes, but I seriously doubt that the Arkansas prosecutors and Arkansas courts are going to ignore perjury before the courts.
Mm. It's starting to get hot, gentlemen. Very hot for the Bidens.
Yeah.
Charlie and Mike, thanks for joining me. Appreciate it.
Here, a Hannity clip of interviewing Ted Cruz. And they're just saying that the government is, they're beginning to be bottlenecks. And the government is stonewalling the Congress, and especially this Republican Congress that does have a majority in the House now. And they've been coming in there and stonewalling them and for not providing documents readily on time and so forth. So here's what Hannity and Ted Cruz had to say in their exchange just recently.
Here with reaction, Texas Senator Ted Cruz. Senator, how are you? Great to see you, Senator. All right, first of all, great job yesterday. That's why Alan Dershowitz says you were one of the best debaters, students he's ever had in his Harvard Law class. But in all seriousness here, they have done everything they can do to obstruct James Comer's investigation into the Biden family. This is a witness that the FBI paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to in the past for intel. They've had this now for years. Why have they sat on it? Well, I believe because they're covering up. Look, the FBI at that hearing yesterday, that deputy director, I asked him directly, did the 1023 allege that Biden had received a personal bribe of $5 million? He refused to answer. I asked him, will the FBI give the 1023 to the Senate Judiciary Committee? He refused to answer. I asked him, is it accurate that there are 17 voice recordings of this Burisma official, 15 talking to Hunter Biden, 2 talking to Joe Biden? He refused to answer. I asked him, does the FBI have those 17 voice recordings? He refused to answer. I asked him, will the FBI give to the Senate Judiciary Committee those 17 voice recordings so we can assess for ourselves? He refused to answer. They are utterly and completely stonewalling. And what's important to know, there's no legal impediment to his answering my question. There's no legal barrier. He's simply sitting there with that smug smirk on his face because the FBI senior leadership believes they're unaccountable. They're not accountable to Congress. They're not accountable to the American people. And these allegations, if true, Joe Biden should be impeached. He should be removed from office. He should be prosecuted, and he should go to prison.
You know, if you look at this recent indictment after the Mar-a-Lago raid, I mean, this was done, what, 7-8 months after the special counsel was appointed. They moved at warp speed to get this done. They've had Hunter's laptop for all these years. We know of low-hanging fruit in terms of issues of drug use and crime, et cetera, but don't we need a full accounting, Senator? How much money did the Biden family do in business with China,
yes,
Russia, Ukraine, Kazakhstan, and a dozen other countries? What do we know about these LLCs that the House Oversight Committee has discovered? You know, why did it take so long to get the suspicious activity reports? Why is Director Wray, why does it take a threat of contempt to Congress to get him to cooperate with the committee that's charged with oversight on these very matters?
Look, part of the reason that the FBI and the DOJ can be so contemptuous of the American people is they believe they will not be called to account. Senate Democrats certainly don't care about the answers. They don't care whether it is true or not that Joe Biden received a $5 million bribe from a foreign national. Not a single Senate Democrat asked about that. Senate Democrats will not hold a single hearing on that question. And they know that the corporate media will cover it up and hide. You mentioned none of the corporate media even mentioned the allegations. When Joe Biden was asked at a press conference about it, he laughed and said, "Where's the money?" You know what? Al Capone said the same thing. He's mocking the American people. And let me point something else out. Listen, I don't know whether it is true or false that Biden, in fact, took this bribe. But do you know who knows to 100% certainty? Joe Biden. And if it's false, he could call on the FBI, he could direct the FBI, hand over the 1023, hand over the 17 voice recordings, because they will exonerate me. They will demonstrate my innocence. He's not doing that. Instead, his henchmen at DOJ are stonewalling. I asked the deputy director, did you do anything to investigate these credible allegations from a trusted informant? He refused to answer that question as well. This is a rogue agency that is thoroughly politicized. It is thoroughly weaponized. And I got to say, look, you contrast that with the Trump indictment, which is utter and complete garbage. And they issue the Trump indictment as this news about Joe Biden was breaking. And compare and contrast the two. With the Trump indictment, there's a complete and utter double standard. If you're going to indict someone for having classified documents, how about Joe Biden and the classified documents he had stuck in just about every orifice of his body? He had stuck in a garage next to his old Corvette. How about Hillary Clinton? Nope, they won't indict them. Why? Because they're on the team. Trump is their enemy. And I believe to indict a former president or sitting president, the threshold should be very, very high. You know what kind of conduct you should need to indict a sitting president or a former president? Something on the order of taking a personal bribe of $5 million from a foreign national. That meets the threshold. This classified stuff does not.
Senator, we need that information. We need to know how much money this family did with every one of these countries and whether or not Maybe that's why China got away with spying on us. Maybe that's why they get away with aggressive maneuvers against our own fighter jets in international airspace and international waterways with our Navy. Frightening time. Senator Cruz, great job, by the way, yesterday. We appreciate it.
This country is just falling to pieces, but we've got to continue to fight and struggle. And Josh Hawley just recently raked Mayorkas over the coals and showed that all these children that are being smuggled in and coming in legally and illegally or whatever, you know, or disappearing, they don't have a hold, a file on all these children. And now they're not even identifying them in, with DNA or anything. So this is just terrible what's going on. We've got to stop it. But here's a recent interview and questioning of Josh Hawley of questioning Mayorkas. Here we go with that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm glad we're having this hearing. And thank you to all of the witnesses. Thank you for being here. I want to visit with you in just a second, but I just want to reiterate something that I heard the chairman say that I agree with, which is that there really ought to be government witnesses sitting there. And I tell you what I'm tired of. I've had Secretary Mayorkas sit in front of me at a different committee, the Homeland Security Committee, where I asked him at length about the outrage of 250,000 migrant children unaccompanied crossing the border in the last 2 years and tens of thousands of them being sold into slavery. Let's not mince words. They've been sold into slavery. When kids are being put into factories, forced to work overnight, forced to work in terrible conditions, they're not getting paid, they're not going to school, sometimes they're not getting fed, that's slavery. And what I heard from Secretary Mayorkas, don't take my word for it, you go look at the record, read the transcript. What he told me was, oh, it's not my problem. We don't have anything to do with it. Not my problem. Now we have a new report from HHS where they say it's not their problem. Amazing how this works. Nobody's responsible. These kids are literally being sold as slaves in the United States of America in the year 2023, and nobody's responsible. They don't want to come and testify to this committee. You bet they don't. They don't want to be put under oath. They don't want to answer any questions. They don't want cameras here. They don't want to take any responsibility. Well, I tell you, it's somebody's fault. It's not the kid's fault. Thank God for the New York Times, phrase I never thought would come out of my mouth. But really, I mean, thank the Lord that the New York Times did these series of reports, because otherwise we'd still be fed the lies from this administration that everything is fine and dandy. We know just where the kids are. It's all great. They're all fine. No, it's not. Is it fine that people like Carolina Yuck, who's 15 years old, I apologize to her if I mispronounced her name. She's one of the folks, one of the young women that the New York Times caught up with. What is she doing? Midnight in Grand Rapids, Michigan, a conveyor belt carrying bags of Cheerios past a cluster of young workers. Carolina, every 10 seconds, has to stuff a sealed plastic bag of cereal into a passing yellow carton. It's dangerous work, fast-moving pulleys and gears that had torn off fingers and ripped open a woman's scalp. The factory was full of underage workers like Carolina who'd crossed the southern border by themselves, vulnerable, now spending late nights bent over hazardous machinery in violation of child labor laws. Carolina says, sometimes I get tired and feel sick. Her stomach often hurt. She was unsure if that was because of the lack of sleep, the stress from the incessant roar of the machines, or the worries she had for herself and her family in Guatemala. This is totally, utterly, completely unacceptable. And I am sick unto death of this administration coming before this Congress and saying, it's not our fault. We have nothing to do with it. We don't know where they are. The kids are fine. Somebody will do it. Somebody will get around to it. Ridiculous. Let's look at some of the things that we've learned about what's going on over at HHS that Secretary Becerra is doing. Here's some quotes from employees at HHS. At least five Health and Human Services staff members said that they were pushed out after raising concerns about child safety. This is all from the New York Times, by the way. Mr. Becerra told the Office of Refugee Resettlement Director that if she could not increase the number of discharges of children, he'd find somebody who would. Next, 20% of kids have to be released every week or you get dinged. It's a conveyor belt of children being forced through the system. And what's the priority of HHS? Just get them out as fast as we can. They go to factories. They go to slave labor. No. I've written to the FBI and asked the FBI, where are the 80,000 plus children this administration's lost? They don't know. I've said it's your responsibility to go get them. It's a direct violation of child labor laws. They're not doing anything. Nobody's doing anything. It's outrageous. It's absolutely outrageous. And the fact that the administration won't come and sit there and answer questions to this committee is absurd. And it is nothing more than cowardice. They don't want to answer questions. They don't want to be responsible. They don't want to take responsibility for this. So let the record reflect that this administration has let tens of thousands of children be sold into slavery, and they are doing nothing about it. And I hope, Mr. Chairman, I'm glad you said that we would be holding additional hearings. We need to have additional hearings. There need to be administration witnesses there, and we need to figure out what in the world is going on and who's to be held accountable for this. Because I tell you what's not an acceptable answer. It's not acceptable to say, it's not my problem. We wish the kids the best. The kids are in danger. The kids are in slavery. The kids are being exploited. And it should not happen in the United States of America. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
This next clip, it comes out of rents.com, R-E-N-S-E.com. I want you to go in there on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 9 o'clock Central Time and listen to his interviews that he has with Erica Kahn. And she's a nano technology expert out of the MIT and area, lives in Boston. But anyway, they're talking right now about the SV40. They're parts of an SV40 virus that they found in the vaccines. So, and the virus. And so, they're scrutinizing that now because it does block, actually accentuates and amplifies the potential of cancer. And so, I'm going to put this clip up. You can listen to it. It's just a short clip. And then I'm going to put Dr. Jane Ruby on the same subject, and she has a little bit more extended, talk about it, about twice that. And you'll be able to, I'll be embed that on my site. So come into thesecrettruth.com, and you'll see the embedded, talk given by Dr. Jane Ruby on the SV40. But listen to this. Erica Kahn is awful good. And Rince and Erica Kahn have dedicated three hours a week to this. And the research that it took to just come up with these 3 hours each week is tremendous. It's hundreds and thousands of hours that they've dedicated to try to bring to the public an understanding about this COVID and these vaccines and so forth. So go in there and listen to those. But listen to this carefully, and then I'll come back and we'll end it with a final clip on feminism by Jay Dyer and Brittany. So anyway, listen closely, and these are technicalities, but you need to know, and you can ask someone that's more scientific along the line, a virologist and so forth, to explain it more to you. But Dr. Jane Ruby will explain it pretty well in the video I'm going to embed on my site. So here we go with Erica Kahn and some questions back and forth talking about this SV40 problem that they found. They did find it, but a doctor did.
So tell us your view on it, how we can explain it to people better than that, perhaps. But that's it. Just remember, it's not the whole virus, SV40. Go ahead.
Okay, so, yes, ever since this geneticist, microbiologist Kevin McKernan, discovered these contaminants, we'll call them contaminants for now, of this double-stranded DNA that included an SV40 promoter, simian virus 40 promoter. There's been panic that these vials contain the SV40 virus. That's not true. Not that what's in there isn't bad, but it's not the whole simian virus 40. It's only the promoter. And this promoter enhances the expression of the gene of interest, in this case, the spike protein. So this SV40 promoter has been used for decades now routinely in genetic engineering. Whenever you want to transfect a cell and force it to produce a foreign protein, this SV40 promoter is very helpful in that regard. It tells the cell to look here, read this, produce this. So they put it in there to dramatically amplify the amplification of this gene of interest.
Well, ultimately, it's pushing the spike, too, which is another
neutralizer. Yes, it is pushing the cell, this case the bacteria, the E. coli that's been transfected with it, to make in huge copies of this plasmid that contains the code for the spike protein. That's
mRNA.
Why it's in there. Yes.
The instructions. Yep.
Yes.
So all of you understand, it's fine to talk about SV40, but understand that it's basically just a protein, and it was not a contaminant.
No, it is just a promoter.
Right. And it causes a lot of trouble for your body's innate ability to fight cancer. It just disables the P53 and the...
Well, that's if... See, it depends on you. What protein or what gene is it forcing the cell to produce? And in this case,
right.
it's forcing it to produce the spike protein, which is bad. When it's a part of the SV40 virus, the entire SV40 virus, it's promoting the production of that large T antigen that we talked about on Monday, and that part of that virus disables P53. And the RB, retinoblastoma gene. And those are two key critical controllers of the cell, whether or not it lives or dies, whether or not it can correct damage, whether or not it divides and multiplies. That's what makes the SV40 oncogenic, the production of that large T antigen.
The T is for tumor, by the way.
T means tumor.
The long form, yeah.
It's also a small T, but they generally the large T antigen that makes it oncogenic.
Don't
now you
let
could
them
argue
fool
the same
you.
Thing
mm-hmm.
with this thing, the fact that it's amplifying the production of the gene for the spike protein. You know, the spike protein has those qualities too. It also will interfere with the. The production of the P53, yes, and can be oncogenic in that regard. But as we know, the spike protein has a lot of other things associated with it too that are just as bad. The question is, why is this promoter being left in the final product? I mean, this was supposed to be just mRNA. Now, the fact that this SV40 is in these vials, both in Moderna and Pfizer.
What a coincidence.
Well, to me, it suggests they were attempting, making a stab at, making this a DNA platform, a transduction platform, rather than just plain old transfection. They actually
Guys
want
the
this thing to go into the cell, into mm-hmm. your cell nucleus, and... cause the nucleus to make the transcripts to make the RNA.
This stuff is awful complicated. The spike protein appears to have many ways to debilitate the human life. And we're not giving medical advice out here, but we're warning people. The spike protein appears to be very dangerous that is being made from these vaccines and these viruses. Inside of our cells, and so it's something to refrain from. At least there's all kinds of other evidence now that's coming out about how dangerous these shots have been, and so that's just fair warning, and you can dig deep into this now. Even the FDA is giving warnings out, they're contradicting themselves. The CDC is saying one thing, the FDA is doing another. So there you got big government just unleashed upon the public. And I saw a little sign on one of our local buses here. It says, be a hero. Get your children vaxxed. Are you kidding me? Get your children vaxxed is a good way to harm the children. So we're going to end with feminism, a talk on modern feminism with Jay Dyer, and here we go with that.
Welcome back to the fourth hour of the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis, and we are covering the pretty wild video. I didn't realize until recently that Brittany had actually made a video on the video that I'm talking about. And so her video is the craziest feminist vice debate. And it just happened to be the video that I was covering in my stream a couple nights ago, where there was this panel of these wild feminists and Pearl there going back and forth with them. And I never heard this term pretty privilege. I didn't know that was a thing. And it's just weird to me that, again, it's making the point that I'm making about how there's always like another level of which, I don't have to listen to what you're saying because I can find a thing in you that you have that discounts what you're saying because of a privilege narrative. So it's this oppression narrative. This video that you did, tell us about this, because I think this illustrates what we're talking about here. What was this debate and what did you think of it?
Well, they covered a lot of various topics, but one of the most fascinating things about the interview, in my opinion, was how much these women did not like each other. Feminism is supposed to be about uniting women, fighting for all of women's rights, this, that, and the other thing. They do not like each other because, as I said before, when there's no moral order, in a society based on truth, that's putting men and women in their rightful place, the goal becomes comfort and pleasure. It all devolves into your own ego. What can you personally gain from all of this? Everything that you can get, power and resources, basically. And so when you can't fight effectively on your own, because we can as individuals, you of course are drawn to joining forming certain alliances. And, you know, these alliances are of course beneficial to your goal to get the most power, resources, and most joy out of life. And these alliances are often, as we see, built across these lines of gender and ethnicity and so on. But as I said, it's devolved into intersectionality because feminism was just too big. There were too many women to get too many things. So it has to get smaller and smaller and smaller. Who's ableist? Who is uglier than somebody else? You know, these people are more victims. So what can I get out of this? It's all completely egotistical. It's them just wanting to receive things not based on merit, but because of their disability, you know, how ugly they are, their race, whatever it might be. Because in a society now, it doesn't matter what you do and what you merit. There is no kind of honor and glory placed on this. It is based on just what you inherently are, your disability or race or your gender. So, of course, people see this and they want to gain the most that they possibly can. And so they, of course, join it, the feminism, and then it becomes more intersectional over time.
Yeah, I remember I was reading a thing about a woman who was a professor at a university some years back, and she had supposedly discovered a missing Gnostic gospel or something to this effect, and it had to do with how the real message of the gospels, the New Testament, the Bible, was this secret sort of Gnostic feminist Pistis Sophia message. And it turned out that her discovery and the stuff that she was pushing was actually fraudulent, right? And when she was confronted about this, she said, well, it doesn't matter that it was fraudulent because everything ultimately is power narratives. There's no such thing as truth anyway. So if I could come up with a fraudulent Gnostic gospel that let my group win in the end, it would have been fine. So it was this weird justification of this because there's not anything right or wrong. It's all power struggles and power narrative anyway. So a lot of people, I think, on the right, they're interacting with and they're thinking about things in terms of the true and the false. But the people that you're interacting with and debating with, as I saw on that panel there, they don't believe in true and false. Everything for them is a power struggle. And so if you come on and you have a better argument, I don't have to listen to what you're saying because you're pretty privileged. To me, that's just bizarre. It's insane to me. It's like, what? This is so mind-blowing to me.
To be fair, I do think that pretty privilege exists to an extent. Just you can look at on Instagram and a pretty woman will get, you know, million to 10 million followers. So that certainly exists, but life is just unfair. Not everyone's going to look completely equal. Not everyone's going to have the same abilities of strength, intelligence, humor. We're all different and we just have to accept this. but a lot of people can't, of course.
Right, but what I'm saying is that not that there's not advantages that people can have because they're attractive or talented, sure, but what I'm saying is that the modus operandi of the portly woman there was, I don't have to listen to what you're saying because you're pretty. In other words, I can find a trait that you have that negates anything that you say. And so it's not about the true or the false. It's actually about who has the upper hand in the power dynamics. And that's a common thing amongst Marxists and then postmodernists is that everything is a power dynamic. And so I can be justified in being completely immoral because everything is immoral power struggle anyway, right?
Yeah, I think that's spot on. Absolutely correct. And I've been thinking lately, I was having this discussion with my husband. I asked him, why do you think feminism has been allowed to thrive and be promoted in the way it has? And I think he gave a very interesting response. He essentially said, it's not that the people in power love women and want what's best for us. Not at all. It's that we're easier to control. The absolute most dangerous thing that threatens the power of the people in control are young men. Every single revolution was led by young men. So it makes perfect sense that those in power, they're doing their best to castrate and emasculate men in every conceivable way, physically, intellectually, spiritually, you name it. So I thought that was very interesting, and it made a lot of sense to me.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, men are the beings who are tasked with setting boundaries. And as my buddy David Patrick Harry is always noting, a lot of today's revolution is premised on the notion that there are no boundaries at all. You can be and become anything that you want. If you want to identify as an attack helicopter one day, you can identify as a woman the next day and a man the third day. You can literally be anything that you want. But that's not true. In fact, the notion of God the Father actually inherently within it sets boundaries. That means that God has certain characteristics and attributes. It doesn't mean he's literally a biological male per se, although Christ is a biological male. But God the Father sets boundaries. So there's a natural order of patriarchy of logos there that can't be destroyed because human beings would like to create a different kind of world, or because fallen human beings are sort of inherently rebelling against that order. And then all of modernity is based around this idea of removing all boundaries and all order and all structure, which is impossible, right? And the irony, I think you would agree, and I think this is one of the reasons Jordan Peterson is really popular in part, is that he's pointed out that even if you're not religious, doesn't the natural world itself contain hierarchy within it? And, you know, we've been told for the last 100, 150 years that, oh, well, we're just sophisticated monkeys anyway. But animals have a structure. The animals have hierarchy. So how is it that we're going to have a perfect order when even the natural world itself doesn't have a total equalitarianism? It seems insane to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, people nowadays no longer respect any sort of authority. Their authority is themselves. What I want, what makes me happy. You know, it's like kill the police. We shouldn't have government. We shouldn't listen to our teachers. You see some of these crazy videos of just students nowadays attacking their teachers. It's getting really common. Right. Or their parents. You see these kids on TikTok just absolutely ripping their parents apart, saying terrible things about them. There is no more a respect for authority because people believe in this equality where I don't have to respect them. I don't have to honor my father, my mother, or any authority for that matter. And so it's a complete rebellion against God's natural order. And of course, that's why it's resulting in chaos and all of this horrific nightmare stuff that we're seeing nowadays.
Now, somebody coming from a perspective who, you know, when we talked in other interviews, you said that you never really had a wild sort of feminist phase, and so you weren't brainwashed in the university where a lot of young girls are. And I'm curious, what has been your experience? What would you say to girls out there who are being told, you know, live for you, lean in, you know, slay queen, don't have babies, don't get married, don't have a husband? What would you say to those girls given the fact that you have chosen the wiser route?
I would say to them, I think I understand why a lot of people take this route, and it is a result of a lot of propaganda and the fact that our society has been kind of restructured in a way that makes it extremely difficult to get married and have children. You know, by that, there are myriad reasons. You can't support a family on one income. It's very difficult. There's no longer a sense of community. There's in kindergartens, them teaching LGBT stuff to your kids, trying to trans their kids. There's so many pitfalls and so much to look out for. But we've seen it time and time again, the women that choose to just stay single forever, don't get married, don't have kids. I think some of them turn out all right and are happy because that was the path they were supposed to walk. But for the most part, women end up miserable. Women are, I think in the past 10, 20 years, the antidepressant rate has risen like 65%. Women are no longer happy with this path that right. The society is saying is the one that's going to make you happy. Well, so I would say explore the other side, and you might
real be quick, pleasantly surprised. Real quick, where can we, before we head out, where can people get your books?
My book's on my website, Brittany Selner. My website's Brittany.
Thank you for being with us this evening, and come in and to thesecrettruth.com, and I'll have those embedded complete interviews up, so you'll be able to hear those in totality. So thesecrettruth.com. Thank you very much. God bless each and every one of you out there.